Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
And Peggy, thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Good morning.
You guys have good news. I mean, it's interesting. Tom wrote to me this past week, and he said, did you see the governor's announcement? And I have to tell you, it's the holiday season. It's the holiday season. And what I do is I'm out running around caroling and performing and doing gigs, and I miss a lot of what's going on, and I hope, you know, to see some of the news stories, and I'm glad when people like Tom write to me and say, hey, this is good, because this is good news for the southeast side, good news for Calumet. Who wants to, Peggy, tell me what happened last week that Tom had to remind me of.
Oh, well, we had the governor and our mayor announce that the Millennium Reserve Plan, it's an initiative, hopefully to capture some funding for the southeast side to continue the work that's being done in the natural areas, the restoration work. In addition, it'll be an economic boost because hopefully there'll be jobs generated by some of the projects that are going to go in there, like the trail building. And they're supposed to build two bridges that'll connect trails that's necessary to go over railroad tracks. And so there's a lot of stuff hopefully coming our way.
How did this happen? It's sad, but in the past we talk about the southeast side, and it usually seems to be the stepchild of environmentalism, where you guys are the last to have good things happen. But suddenly somebody has stepped up here, and I guess Congressman Mike Quigley was one of those people.
Congressman Quigley had been working out in the Calumet area with us for quite some time now. It's not his district. Of course, he's a Northside congressman, but he was out for the announcement. We're grateful to him for all the work and for him hanging in there as long as he has with us, because he's back when he was Cook County Commissioner, he had been out, and we were talking about taking some of the lands, open lands out in that area, and putting them into the county forest preserve system. So he's been with us a long time, and he's helped us out with the ideas and getting it across the goal line. So we hope we're just about there.
So we're talking about a huge area. And if you go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, you'll see the map of the Millennium Reserve. And it's Illinois and Indiana?
Right. Uh-huh.
And there's a core project zone that now that's where the activity is going to happen first.
In the core, right.
Peggy, what's the core all about here?
Well, I would say the core is kind of like, you know, the equivalent of a shovel-ready project. That area has been designated open reserve space for quite a few years now. The problem is to get the funding to complete all the restoration work, and the task itself is monumental. It's a huge task to restore some of those areas.
Yeah, well, what kind of degradation are we talking about there?
Well, you have to remember that was an old industrial area, so we have all kinds of, you know, chemical dumping that went in there and contamination. And plus, again, these areas are fragments of what used to be there. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to have the pristine kind of natural areas that, and so they've been degraded because of the fact that they're just really hanging in there to some extent. They're just barely hanging in there. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make them people friendly, to make them attractive, to make them more natural, to bring them back closer to what they should be.
You know, forgive me for interrupting, but some of those are different agendas too. I mean, making it people friendly really is different from making it environmentally sound.
Well, that's true, but once it's environmentally sound, first of all, then you feel safe going on it. I mean, if there's contamination,
yeah.
Okay. And the other thing is that it's going to be attractive in some ways. For example, the invasive species Phragmites, right now, if you see some of the wetland areas, I mean, they're just, you know, surrounded by Phragmites. So when people drive by, what they see is this huge, you know, wheat-looking kind of plant, where if you can get your cattails and draw the wildlife that should be there and things like that, it becomes more attractive.
That's a really good point. The Phragmites, I think folks, you know, when you drive along a freeway, often in the ditches and the wetlands, you'll see these plants, and they're actually kind of pretty, and they have the feathery, and I'm sure a lot of people go, oh, look at that native plant. Why don't we have more of those? Folks, those aren't natives. Those are plant. That's an invasive species that has is choking out our waterways and choking out the native species. As you said, cattails are actually much more desirable. But the problem with cattails, there's also invasive cattails, and very it's hard to even identify what a native cattail is.
Well, that's why this restoration work is so difficult, because to find the right balance, to find the things that that actually belong there to make and help restore areas is not an easy task, because in itself, sometimes you need maintenance work just to keep, because these places are, again, like I said, just hanging in there. You need maintenance work that has to continue on even after the restoration work is done. Mm-hmm. You need maintenance work in order to keep this stuff going.
Well, yeah. Several weeks ago, we were talking about Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie, and how you can't just throw seeds down and say, okay, and now here comes the prairie, we'll just get out of the way, because what happens is all the invasives come right back. You have to do it very carefully, and then you have to maintain it.
That's the key.
All the time, because it will revert. Those plants, they're just looking for a toehold. And then, as we've seen with so many, like buckthorn and garlic mustard and all Phragmites, all the plants, they're just looking for an opportunity. And part of our problem is we've given it to them, we've allowed them to take over.
Right. And because again, our environment has been changed drastically, and that's what appears to thrive in the areas, whereas the natives have a harder time.
Mm-hmm. In the studio, I have Peggy Salazar, Executive Director of the Southeast Environmental Task Force, Tom Shepard, who is the Secretary of the Board, and they're here to talk about the Millennium Reserve Initiative in the Calumet region. Now, I saw a figure of 17 million. That's just a start, right?
Right. That's like seed money, you might say.
Yeah, because I can't imagine this can all get done. If you look at 140,000 acres, even just the core project zone is 15,000 acres. And are you going to be taking? I know you talked about brownfields down there with chemical residue. Are you going to be removing old buildings and things like that too? What's going to happen?
I'm not so sure that's on the agenda as yet. That part hasn't been hammered out. One of the first projects that is on the agenda, and I was with the governor the other night, and he is, I got to tell you, he is hot on this thing. It's
really
it's right on.
Good for him.
It is, and he's been out there. I first met Governor Quinn back around 1986, right at Lake Calumet, and so he's been out to. Keynote speaker for the Southeast Environmental Task Force annual dinner.
I'll tell you what, the next time you have dinner with the Gov, all right, tell him Mike Novak's been waiting for him to come back on his show, all right, and talk environmental issues. He's ducking me, okay?
Going up to the northwest side, maybe it'll be a little easier for him, because I think he lives up that way.
Well, okay, maybe should I stalk him then? Should I just go to his house and hang out and say, Mike wants to talk to you on the radio again?
That might work.
Okay.
But one of the first things is connecting some trails that are out there. We've been working on being able to finish what we call the Burnham Greenway and the Burnham Trails, linking up with the CalSAG trails, and ultimately getting into downtown. So right now we have what's called the Burnham Gap, and one of the principal features of this project is to be able to link that up together, so it'll go out to Indiana, it'll go downtown, and it'll go out to the western suburbs and the south part of the city.
So it's actually a greenway that connects the whole region.
Right, yes. And there will be historical markers and different. Recently, the Chicago Park District just took on 560 additional acres out there of marshes and open lands that they're going to develop into recreational properties. So this will help to link up all of that.
How long has this been in the works, this whole thing, this project?
I would have to say that it started back in the late 90s when a lot of different agencies and institutions in the city and state and federal governments came together to work on what was the Calumet Open Space Reserve. And this is kind of picking up on all the work that was adopted, by the way, by the City Council back in 2002 and sets aside almost identical to what the Millennium Reserve is going to accomplish here. So it's been over 10 years now, at least.
So that's hence the name Millennium. I was thinking, hey, you guys missed it by a decade. Maybe we should call it something else. But
I have to tell you, there was a lot of controversy among us members of the advisory group because we're pretty stuck on the Calumet name because it really identifies with our
Well, it
area.
Does. You know, you're right.
So we compromised. I think we got the Calumet core.
Yeah, you got the Calumet core. But right. But you're right. Calumet, you say Calumet, people know what you're talking about.
Right.
And I know that there's a lot of people who have been fighting very hard in that region. One of them, Suzanne Malik McKenna, former director of the Department of the Environment, and I talked to her. And I know that this was a huge passion with her. And so I imagine you've worked with her in getting some things done.
Yeah, and that's like Thomas said, you know, this is like an overlay over the Calumet Reserve area. It really is. Like I said, a shovel-ready kind of project. And also, even before the city recognized, you have to remember the residents and community recognized the value of those wetlands long before anybody else did. And they put a lot of sweat equity in this because they had to fight off airports, landfills, bus barns in order to keep these areas open space. And this has been going on for a long time, even before, like I said, the city recognized these areas.
Good point. No, that there's always pressure to develop. You know,
yes.
The developers are always lurking.
There would be no Millennium Reserve if it had not been for the community and their intelligence and their foresight to see that these areas were valuable.
Uh-huh.
So that is why I always say I like to think we know what's best for our area, and that's always sometimes an issue for us.
One of the things you mentioned earlier, it's kind of interesting because in the second half of this hour, I'm going to be talking to some folks from LaSalle County about an open pit sand mine that threatens Starved Rock State Park. Mm-hmm. And the argument always made against environmental development is that it will cost jobs. Oh, you darned environmentalists. You're just going to take away our economy. What's wrong with you? And one of the first things you mentioned, Peggy, was it's going to create jobs. So why is it that you do the sand mine and that's going to create jobs and, you know, that saving up that park doesn't create jobs, but yours does? It's a rhetorical question, but the point is that you can create jobs by doing environmental work. Talk about some of those jobs that will be created.
Well, for example, we talked about maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Once you do restoration work, the restoration work itself creates jobs because it has to be physical. A lot of restoration is physical restoration.
Mm-hmm.
So that creates jobs. Then you have maintenance work that needs to be done continually for a long-term, forever, probably, basis. So that's going to have jobs. So if you have people trained to do that work, that creates jobs. The other thing the task force has been doing for a few years, and we've actually stepped up the effort, is we do ecotourism, where we have people come in and see this. Many people don't know these areas exist. They don't even know Chicago has this much open space. It's hard to find that kind of stuff, especially anything that's remotely natural in a city, in an urban setting.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel there's opportunity here to bring in people from outside the community and also serve as sort of an economic engine, because then we can introduce them to local restaurants, bring them in so that hopefully they stop, and some of the businesses. And so we see this as an opportunity for that kind of stuff. We don't have at this point many assets, and I say this all the time on the southeast side of the city right now. These are our assets. We should develop and capitalize on the best we can while also preserving the environment.
I had something in my head and it just kind of went, burr, and sometimes that happens. But it was about the open lands there. Oh, I know what it was. It's you've done the Toxics to Treasures tours, you know, and I think that's really ingenious on your part to take people around and say, here's what we have here. But I would imagine, wouldn't it be wonderful in a couple of decades not to be able to do that anymore because most of this stuff is gone? I mean, not to say, well, here's the potential of our area, but unfortunately, this is the reality. And wouldn't it be wonderful if the reality became the open spaces and the natural area?
We're looking at that happening right now, Mike. The centerpiece of this entire project is Lake Calumet. Now, Lake Calumet is probably, oh, maybe, what would you say, Peggy, about 20% of what it originally was. And Chicago has two other sizable lakes, and we have both of them in this in the footprint of this Calumet project.
When you say it's 20% of what it was, it used to be much larger, and it's been drained?
Exactly, right.
It's filled in.
Been filled in over the years. In fact, on the southeast side, they say that about 70% of the area has been filled by mostly from the steel mills, slag coming out of the mills.
Uh-huh.
So everything under the sun has been dumped in Lake Calumet at one time or another, and the areas around Lake Calumet. In fact, the Harborside Golf Course, which is an accomplishment there, one of the treasures on our Toxics Treasures
Tour. And I
have
played there.
Oh, okay.
It's a beautiful course.
It really is indeed. However, we don't feel that that should be the end all of saying that the Lake Calumet area is open to the public.
Oh, heavens no. In fact, you know, you could make an argument that I mean, it is beautiful, but it's not the kind of environmental progress you want. You know, a golf course is not really an environmental treasure. It's just not.
Plus, it costs about $90 to play there, too. I know you can afford it.
No,
Mike,
I cannot. I work in radio, remember?
But once you're on the golf course, you do get to see a view of Lake Calumet. Mm-hmm. And I think you will agree that it's very beautiful.
Yes.
We don't get to see that. The public, the general public, does not get to see that view because it's not open to the public, technically. So that's why we want to open up Lake Calumet.
And how are you going to do that? What will open up Lake Calumet? What kind of facility? What kind of area?
Well, I'd like to speak on that because it's right across from historic Pullman where I live. And mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of my youth out there fishing and hiking, bird watching, things like that. And after they built the golf course, we found that they put up a concertina wire fence around the entire Lake Calumet area.
Are you kidding me?
It looks like a state prison if you drive by, Mike.
And who's they?
The owners of the golf course and the area around there, it's the Illinois International Port District, which is about to see some substantial change there. The board makeup is changing, the mood of the board, and in fact, the governor's direction is to begin to do something that we've been pushing for many, many years, and that's to get that fence down, to set aside some of that land for the public, for recreation, for conservation purposes, and not only for the golf course. There was a third golf course planned for that area, but it's not going to happen now, and we're hopeful that other types of projects are going to come there.
Governor Quinn, tear down this fence.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you. but I had no idea. See, now I feel bad that I golfed there, you know, and I don't want to be part of cutting people off from the lake.
When you go on our tour, we point all that stuff out.
So I have to be on the tour.
That's right. You have to
all right,
on one of
right.
our tours.
Okay.
But we have some new members on that board. And
and how are the board members selected?
It's the entity is two governmental agencies, and it's a state and city. So the mayor has half the appointments, and the governor has half the appointments on that board. And all past previous boards and the management there has been unfriendly to the community, to the environmental community anyway. They fought us at every turn. We've been partnering primarily with Friends of the Parks and other nonprofits to get things opened up over there. And it looks like our hard work is beginning to pay off with the new members that have a different opinion.
You have to keep making that progress. I mean, it sounds like you're going in the right direction, and now you're getting some help, and It's just a fabulous turnaround for your area. But of course, it's just a start, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we still, and I tell Tom and I tell our board, we're guardians of all of those plans, because there's been many things started. Nothing has been completed. We're mm-hmm. waiting for the Calumet.
Well, the golf course got completed.
Yeah.
And the fence.
Oh, that's true. But we're also waiting for the Ford Environmental Center. We have yet to see that. There has been no construction on that, and that was to be like the gem.
And haven't the plans been scaled back for that as well?
That's what we understand, but no one's actually told us what those plans look like or what it means in terms of usage or anything like that. So we're trying to keep that in our radar. Also, they're bringing back the firing range, the outdoor firing range, which we don't believe belongs in the middle of the reserve.
Who's advocating for that?
The city of Chicago.
City wants to bring back the firing range.
Yes. No, well, the Chicago Police mm-hmm. Department has proposed. They are trying to get a lease from the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, that is one of the stakeholders in this area. They own a lot of the property out here. And the police department found a little pocket, a nice, quiet, pristine area where some threatened species of bird life are, and wildlife is out there. And they want to put this training facility. It's a they call it a firing range and training facility. Our imaginations are running wild with all the different types of things that they want to do out there.
Couldn't you find them a slag heap?
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, why is it that you got so few areas that are left and they got
to
gobble up that?
Thank you.
Like you were saying earlier, sort of everything that nobody else wants gets put on the south side of Chicago, and I think that's part of this too. Mm-hmm. People don't want an outdoor firing range in their backyard. And so they're putting it here because it's a little isolated, but that's what makes this pocket so valuable to the wildlife, because it is isolated. But in addition to that, now that there is a landfill adjacent, 400 acres of landfill space that could be repurposed. It's closed. We were expecting it to be repurposed down the road. Mm-hmm. They had told us eventually there'd be natural covering on it, and that it would be used for hiking trails. And we were told all this was possible. And if the firing range is put there, none of that will happen, because they're not going to have public that close to a firing range.
All right, so I have to ask you, how does that something like that get changed? How do you lobby for that? I mean, who's behind that? Obviously, the police department.
The police department.
But is the city throwing its weight behind that? And that takes me to my other question, is how big an ally is Mayor Rahm Emanuel?
Well, he's been untested so far, I guess you would have to say. But we do know that he's advocating for it. The city police department is really pushing for it. So on January 5th, the Water Reclamation District commissioners are meeting, and they're considering this lease, which is a 39-year lease for the property.
So the Water Reclamation District is the ultimate arbiter of this?
Right. It did come
And why
up,
is that? Because it's near the lake?
Oh, they own the property.
They own the property.
They own the property, and the city wants to lease it from them.
So should we be lobbying the Water Reclamation District?
Exactly. At the, I think, a meeting back around when this was first proposed, around late summer, two of the commissioners, Deborah Shore and Frank Avila, voted to not grant this lease.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, those two votes.
Right, yeah. But, well, what surprised us was there were seven or eight others that voted against it. So, in favor of the gun range.
In a pristine area.
Right. So we were able to ask them to do a wildlife study, and we're going to see the results of that study. And it's going to be coming back up on January 5th. And
why do all these things? I mean, we're going to find out, and I'm going to have to let you go in just a second. Mm-hmm. We find out that all these things happen in the holidays, these crucial votes. And what I've discovered is in the holidays, nobody's paying attention except the people whose vested interests are there. And then they have these meetings on January 5th or December 28th or, and then half the people that would get involved are out of town or with family.
Right.
And mm-hmm. it's like these politicians are really crafty. 50. They mm-hmm. they know their stuff.
Right.
They know when to have meetings. You know, they
so
should be more.
So then that makes you wonder, is it such a good thing if this is what they have to do in order to accomplish what they want? If this is the kind of methods they have to employ, is it necessarily a good thing? And so this is why we're so, you know, determined, because, again, what, like I said earlier in our conversation, we knew what was good for us in that community. We understood the value of those areas, and the community had the foresight to see the potential. I think we're smart enough to know that this doesn't belong there.
You know, and what's interesting is I look at you, too, and I know the history of the Southeast Environmental Task Force. I served on the Chicago Recycling Coalition Board with Marianne Burns, who was just a wonderful woman.
The conscience of the Calumet, she's known as.
Yeah, and who passed away last year. And it's just battle after battle after battle after battle. And then, you know, and I wrote on my website about this. Here we are. This is good news. And yet, yeah, it's kind of good news, but it's still more battles and more battles and more battles to make this happen. Environmentalists everywhere are always fighting these battles. It just never stops.
Right.
You know, it's you don't have time for the holidays, really. You can't relax. You can't go play, because somebody's going to sneak in and pass a law that hurts you for the next 50 years, or put up a shooting range in a pristine area, or whatever.
Right.
That's or a fence around the lake.
Fence.
So the golfers can't get to the lake and swim, you know, when we want
to. We're so grateful to our membership and all of the dedicated environmentalists in the Southeast area. There are a number of them, and we're grateful to you, Mike, for this show, because it's the only one. I keep hearing you say on your promos that you're the only one in the country that does this, and we're happy that you do, and we're grateful to Suzanne Malik McKenna, too, for all the work that she did, working side by side with Marion in years past and with us.
Yeah, she's, as a matter of fact, for people who want to, I just got information about Suzanne Malik McKenna this week. She's going to be a senior counsel with, I don't even know how you pronounce this, Jaskulka Terman and Associates, and they're a strategic communications firm, and she's also going to be doing the Regional Trees Initiative on behalf of the Morton Arboretum. So, you know, I knew that she was going to land on her feet. What is just really frustrating to me is that the Department of the Environment, as of January 1st, will cease to exist in the city of Chicago, and that's not a good thing.
It's sort of contrary, knowing that they have the Millennium Reserve Plan and the Calumet Core, and then to find out that we don't have a Department of Environment. It doesn't make sense, does it, sort of?
Yeah. No, it doesn't to me. And mm-hmm. and you said, Tom, that Mayor Emanuel is untested. He's on my watch list right now. I'm serious. I'm a lot leery of the direction it's going, and certainly in terms of the environment, because I just think that by, you know, putting these various programs into different departments, it's a way to hide them, and it's a way to smash them, or just to fund them out of existence.
Or steal money from them?
It's a good thing Heather doesn't have her mic on over there. But so, you know, and I can say I'm the radio guy. I don't have to work with him. But on the other hand, I would love to have Karen Weigert, his chief sustainability officer, on the program. I met her the other week at the award ceremony for the Gardener of the Year and the Mayor's Landscaping Awards. You know, and that was one thing, too. That might even go away. And I'm thinking, come on, guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's no enthusiasm, no real enthusiasm that I'm seeing coming out of this administration for some of the things that Mayor Daley did in terms of the environment.
Except bicycling.
Bicycling? Good. Well, yeah. Yay, there we go. We got bicycling. All right. Well, how about some of the other stuff? Mr. Emanuel, tear down that fence.
There you go.
That's what we have to do. All right. Well, Peggy Salazar, thank you so much. Tom Shepard, I love the fact that you're always communicating with me. Tom's always on Facebook with me and telling me stuff that's going on in the Southeast side. Please keep me posted. You're welcome anytime on the show. And I think we should review this as we go forward, because
sure. There's
a lot of work left to do, right?
Yes.
You bet.
And a lot of battles apparently to fight.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think so. It just never ends, does it?